Leviticus 22, we ended with this point, and I think it's a point that we need to start again. 31 through 33, "So you shall keep my commandments and do them. I am the Lord. You shall not profane my holy name, but I will be sanctified among the sons of Israel. I am the Lord who sanctifies you, who brought you out from the land of Egypt to be your God. I am the Lord." When God brought his people out of Egypt, what was the reasoning? Why did God need to bring his people out of Egypt? What was happening in Egypt? What was going on in Egypt? So they were in Egyptian captivity or Egyptian bondage for 400 years. They were serving this Pharaoh. They were doing laborious work. They were being murdered and killed if they were a male child. So God brought them out of the land of Egypt. And what purpose did he have in mind that we just read about? So he is going to be their God. He's going to establish them himself as their leader, as their God, the one and only God. What else? To sanctify, I heard, to fulfill a promise to Abraham. God had mentioned to Abraham that he was going to create a great nation out of his descendants, that his descendants were going to be numerous, that he was going to bring them to a special land, that through his seed all nations would be blessed. And we see God fulfilling his promise, being faithful to his word, even though he hadn't spoken to the people for such a long time at the beginning of Exodus. They cry out to God. God hears their prayer. But there's a purpose here that he is going to sanctify them. I started thinking about in what ways is God expecting his people to be holy or different or sanctified, especially in connection to what he's saying here, bringing them out of Egypt, and what that has to do with chapter 23. I want to confess to y'all something. I really struggle with what I'm going to try and inspire you and guide our thoughts this morning in terms of understanding how to let God be in control of my life. I think in a lot of ways, I really humble myself before the Lord, and I try to express humility in the things that I do and the things that I say. When push comes to shove, I like to have a hold of the reins. I like to think that, yes, God is in control, but I'm going to do everything possible to set God up for success. Now, I say that because I struggle with the application of chapter 23 to know that God is in control, that God doesn't really need me, and what that has to do with God sanctifying his people. I want you to picture this. Can we get these lights on? I'm like half asleep right now, and I need some brightness here. Think about this. So you have just fled or been led out of Egyptian captivity. You have real enemies. Maybe you think that those enemies are going to pursue you. Maybe you think that God is watching over you, but you know that, hey, Pharaoh or the next Pharaoh might come after me too. Like, I don't know what's going to happen. God is then telling you, while you're wandering through the wilderness, while you're being prepared as a people to be my people, there's something that I want you to do that's going to set you apart from everybody else. I want you to rest. I want you to rest and do nothing. I want you to literally cease. That's the word Sabbath. The word Shabbat is cease, stop, do nothing. Now think about that and think about what that looks like. I'm doing nothing. My enemies are doing something. God, you tell me to stop. You tell me don't even collect food. Just trust that the food that I'm going to provide for you is going to last 2 days, and I want you to do nothing. I would really struggle with that. I would really struggle, and this reveals a lot about my heart, to trust in God at that point. You really want me to do nothing, God. That can't be right. There has to be something you want me to do. Or I would look for something to do. Or in my mind, what I would do is probably collect maybe 3 or 4 times as much manna as I needed, because I would be like, oh, I know someone is going to lack manna because they didn't obey God, and so here, I have enough to provide for you too. It is really hard for me to come to terms with doing nothing, ceasing, stopping, Sabbathing, Shabbatting. That's what God calls his people to do. Think about what that would look like in your life. Some of you don't even have to imagine that hard. Like, you know that because of whatever business you run or you're a part of, whatever wisdom that you've been able to garner or success you've had in this life, a day of not working would mean that you would lose out. Now, don't hear what I'm not saying. I'm not saying that our worshiping on Sundays is the Sabbath. That's an erroneous thought. That's wrong. That's not right. Sunday is not the Sabbath. But you understand the concept of doing nothing means that you are missing out on something. And that's where I really want to challenge us to think, personally, where is our trust in the Lord? Maybe this isn't a struggle for you, and maybe this is just very foreign to you. Then help someone else. And if you don't know who to help, help me, because I really struggle with this. Like, I don't feel qualified to teach this morning. The other thing I want to point out before we start the class this morning, and I'm going to repeat this at the end of the class. It is not a requirement, nor is the Lord requiring, that we observe the Sabbath today. The Lord is not requiring that we observe the Sabbath today. That seems to be a popular teaching that's been going on or going, becoming more and more predominant, that we have failed in some way to hold this standard that God had set for his people all the way back in Exodus, that we're supposed to observe and remember the Sabbath. To that, I would cite to take some time to read Hebrews chapter 4. We don't have time to get into that this morning. Hebrews chapter 4. Also note passages like Colossians chapter 2, specifically verses 16 and 17. You could look at passages and you start stretching it, but I think the application is still kind of there. Like Romans 14 would be a good study for you to do. And if you have no idea what I'm saying, that's fine. If you have your own opinions and your own thoughts and comments on that, talk to me. I would love to have that discussion with you. This is not the time that I want to have that discussion, though. I want to get into the text of Leviticus 23, help us have an understanding of what's happening in Leviticus 23, what the teaching to God's people was in Leviticus 23, and then how in the world we might apply this to us today. So that's my caveat. We are not required or commanded to observe the Sabbath. You don't see that repeated in the New Testament anywhere. You do see a fulfillment or a completion of that in the rest that were offered by God. If you are a diligent student, you notice I didn't put out homework this week. And that's because up until like 8 o'clock this morning, I was trying to really sort through what I wanted you guys to take away. There's a book I read, and I don't necessarily recommend you reading this book unless you are, maybe if you're like Zach and you're just like a Bible nerd and you really like themes in the books and stuff like that. There's a book by this guy named Michael Morales. It's called Who Shall Ascend the Mountain of the Lord? Who Shall Ascend the Mountain of the Lord? A Study of Leviticus. The author is Michael Morales. If you want to get into some of like the nuances of this, that's a great, great tool. I was really impressed with it. I don't recommend books. My wife would tell you I don't read books. that was an impressive book. But this is what I want you to gather from the class. As you read, and I'll put all this up on the website. As you read chapter 23, something should jump out at you. And it's the repetition of what? Look at the PowerPoint if you need help. Okay, festivals, religious holidays, Jewish feast days, but there is something that's repeated in throughout the book. I'm looking for a number. Seven, great job. As you read Leviticus 23, you see the number seven over and over and over and over again. You see this idea of Sabbath over and over and over and over again, even down to the kind of sacrifices that were offered in chapter 23, verse 18. Along with the bread, you shall present seven 1-year-old male lambs without defect. So you see this number pop up over and over and over and over again. And why might that be significant? Is this just like a lucky number for the people? So lucky number seven. Okay, so seven, there's an association with the days of creation. God creates the world in 6 days, and on the seventh day, he rests. So that number has an association with God creating life. Great point. Anything else? I'm glad you thought of that. Joseph? Yeah, there is a reason that seven appears. At its most simplistic value, seven is supposed to be associated with God. When we see seven, there's a call to remember the Lord. There's a call to think about God. So, I tried my best to list all the verses that contain some pattern of seven. And as you can tell, they're pretty extensive. The key verse in this book, is, I think, verse 32 of chapter 23. This is to be a Sabbath of complete rest to you. Seven is symbolic of completion, of perfection, of fullness. That's what seven is representing when we think of seven as it appears in the text and as it appears throughout the Bible. There's an association with God, but there's also an association of completion. Our sister mentioned the days of creation. There's 7 days of creation. And you can get technical and say there were six, but there's 7 days of creation. Seven, God completed his work and he rested. Refreshed in his work that he had finished. Interestingly enough, the text in Genesis that talks about God resting is not God Shabbatted. He didn't cease. He didn't stop. He delighted in his work. Nuach is the Hebrew word used there. Similar but different. It would be like saying, we have different words for rest. You can, take a break, sit down, lay down, take a nap. Those are all forms of rest, but they're all different. That's kind of like a difference between Shabbat and Nuach. So here, God's point is the Sabbath is complete. Seven is complete. It's complete rest to you. You shall humble your souls. Man, Aaron, whatever you drink on Wednesday is contagious. On the ninth of the month at evening, from evening until evening, you shall keep your Sabbath. Why might this be important? As you break down the rest of the book, you start seeing this pattern in the feast days. So I want to not necessarily read this because I'm going to explain what exactly is happening here, but you have the first day of the feast days, or the start of the religious festival calendar, is Passover. Now, someone please explain to me what a Passover is. What is that talking about? Who is it talking about? Like, pretend I've never read the Bible before. Someone explain to me Passover. I think it's the one we know the most. So I chose that one intentionally. Okay, so we have a call back to Egypt, remember? This is what we read at the end of Leviticus 22. God said, I brought you out of Egypt. We established, as our sister Dee said, that they were in Egyptian captivity. The Israelites, God's people, were in Egyptian captivity. How many plagues did the Lord send to free his people from Egyptian captivity when Pharaoh kept saying, no, I'm not going to let your people go? Or Pharaoh kept trying to compromise with Moses, saying, look, just take the males, go out. And Moses wasn't going to do that because that's not what God commanded. He sends these nine plagues, and then ultimately with the tenth plague being the death of the firstborn. God told his people, the angel of death, my angel, is going to come and fly over, and it's going to kill every firstborn, firstborn male of the house. Unless what? Unless you take a lamb, and this is really cool. I didn't know this was in Exodus. I went back to read this. God is very specific even about the kind of lamb that you're offering to him. Very similar to Leviticus. Just really neat. But he said, you're going to take this lamb. The number 7 appears in the lamb that's being offered, 7 years old. You're going to take this lamb. You're going to kill it. You're going to slay it. You're going to take its blood, and you're going to take the blood and kind of paint or put it over your doorpost. That way, when I see the blood of the lamb, I know I'm not going to kill your firstborn. I'm going to Passover. So Passover is the first religious feast that marks the Jewish calendar. This is where their calendar is really going to start. So verse 5 talks about that. In the first month, on the 14th day of the month, at twilight, is the Lord's Passover. Why twilight? Thought that was kind of interesting. What's a twilight? Okay, between dark and light. So, interestingly enough, when do our days start, for instance? Like, American days. That's interesting. I hadn't thought about that. You're right. My day starts when my alarm goes off and I see the sunrise. Like, so yeah, I look very foolish. I'm so. So my day starts at first light, so if you will. So our days kind of start. Our work days start at the rising of the sun. Interestingly enough, Jewish days started at the setting of the sun. So as the sun comes down, that marks the day. So for instance, if you're a Jew and you're going to celebrate Sabbath, you don't celebrate Friday at midnight. You celebrate Friday at sundown, because now that becomes the Sabbath. And that Sabbath goes from evening through the sunrise back into the sunset. It's really cool. I love that imagery. I was talking with Chelsea about this, the imagery of like, you go to bed in darkness and you're hoping for the light to come. And then you live your day like that. It's like a more positive way, I think, to think of like what we're trying to do in this life. But God is saying, look, you're going to observe this day. You're going to think about this day. This marks the beginning. And now I want to explain what some of these things mean in a way that I understand it better. So if you were to break down verse 5 is talking about Passover. It's the start of their ritual calendar from evening till evening. Then you get into the next section of the book, that is verses 4-8, that is the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And I've pointed out a 7 pattern, right? This is intentional by God. The Feast of Unleavened Bread is how long? It's a 7-day feast. Cool, right? The next major feast is Pentecost, the Feast of Weeks, some translations say. It is 49 days plus 1, 50 days. It is 7 times 7 weeks, so it's the Feast of Weeks. Then you get into Rosh Hashanah, or the Feast of Trumpets. And the Feast of Trumpets happens on the first day of the what month? 7th month. Man, it's so cool and how intentional it is, right? Then you get into the Day of Atonement. The Day of Atonement happens on the 10th day of also the seventh month. And then you get into the Feast of Tabernacles. The Feast of Tabernacles is how long? A seven-day feast in the seventh month. So, why is this important? Like, why are there so many sevens or allusions or calls to seven in the chapter 23 of Leviticus? Our sister mentioned that there's an association with seven all the way back to the days of creation, and I for one think that's super intentional. I'm not the only one. This is a sentence I compiled that's kind of like a sentence of multiple Jewish scholars that I was reading. But think of the fourth day. So Genesis chapter 1, verse 14. On the fourth day, God creates the sun, the moon, and the stars, and they're going to rule over the day and night. They're a marking of the days. When God is going to establish a day. And that day is going to be used in the Jewish calendar or the Jewish mindset to mark the start of the festival seasons. You're going to see this a lot, too, in chapter 24, which is why I'm kind of trying to lay the groundwork here. That mark is, or the rising and the setting of the sun from day four is going to mark the start of the sacred feast, the Jewish feast, the ritual, the annual feast. And so you have this whole sacred calendar, so to speak, of Israel that you're going to see talked about in Exodus. You're going to see talked about in Leviticus. And it's trying to recall the Genesis account of the days of creation. So the way I summarize this, this is like a sacred time. This is what God is trying to point out to his people. These days are an interruption to your normal days. Think about how we observe holidays. So what's the next major holiday we have in this country as a people? So Thanksgiving, that's when everyone gets off work. And that's what I'm talking about. I know there's like a holiday at the end of next week, but most of you don't get off work for that. So, but yeah, the next national holiday is going to be Thanksgiving. Yes, Kurt? Yes. Kind of, convocation is a word that my New American Standard translates to. It's a way to say an assembly. What Kurt was mentioning in the comment there, these were supposed to be private assemblies, private convocations. They're not out parading in the streets. They're very personal. Now, he also talked about the Jewish calendar. In my Bible, I have an inductive study Bible. It's called you don't need to see this, but I have a Jewish calendar. If you can get a hold of that or you can see that, in some ways, I think it's a little bit helpful to understand. I chose this one because, honestly, I thought it was one of the cleaner ones that was available. In terms of when they see the first month, when they saw the second month, the third month. Now, the first month for them, mentioned in the text, I think, or maybe not specifically this text, but you've read it elsewhere, the month of Nisan. So their first month is not our first month. Their first month would have started in about March. So March to April is their first month when you're observing the Jewish calendar. That might be helpful. I'm not going to add that to this class just because I think it's a little confusing. But if you want to look at that and you want to get a hold of that, it's just a Jewish calendar that explains their month. And the first month for the Jews would have been March to April for us. So if that's helpful for you to start. But this is what it looks like. And again, I just chose this because it's the cleanest version of this that I could really find. There's a lot of versions that explain this. A lot of people that bring in other texts to kind of explain the fulfillment of this in the New Testament. Again, you can do that, but that's not the purpose of this class. But there are specific Jewish months. These are supposed to be observed by God's people, and the number 7 is intentionally repeated throughout it because there's supposed to be an association with God and an association with completeness. So questions or comments or, I don't know if I can go, can I go backwards on this thing? I can. Okay. Or anything that is not discernible on this page. Yes. I don't know. I don't know. I'm looking here at the calendar that I have in my Bible. I don't think they had more days. I want to say it was marked in the same way we mark it, because I have their first month would be March, second month, April, May, June, July, August, September, October, November, January. Yeah, all through February. So I don't know that they had longer days than we do. I don't know if someone else has more information on that.
It's all based on creation, the way God set up. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A month, and then those came together to make 365 days for us. Now, there's maybe three something else.
Yeah.
But it's got to be right around the same thing because it's based on creation.
Yeah, I would have assumed that too, but I don't actually know. Yes, Kurt. So Kurt said between 29 and 30 days, and then they add extra days if they need to. That's how I would do it too. great. So yeah, very similar to how we're observing days, months. Thank you for that, Kurt. Any other questions or comments? All right. So I want to get into chapter 23 here. So the Lord spoke again to Moses, saying, verse 1 of chapter 23, "Speak to the sons of Israel and say to them, the Lord's appointed times, which you shall proclaim as holy convocations," convocations again means assemblies, "my appointed times are these." And then he gets into them. So the concept of this time is related or correlates back to what? Our theme of Leviticus. Holy. So holy is unique, one of a kind, set apart for a specific purpose. That same idea of holiness or holy days is going to be seen in these festivals. Each one of them has a unique, one of a kind reason that they are created. They are purposeful. God didn't just randomly choose these days. The concepts that we're seeing here all tie back to holiness and what God expected from his people and for his people. So even the observance of these days is to help his people become more holy. So they start their ritual calendar on Passover in verse 4, and they continue on from there. Now, when we think of key concepts in this chapter, you have the religious feasts, but look, for instance, at verses 9 through 14. 9 through 14 don't fall into religious feasts. They don't fall into a specific day that is supposed to be observed. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the sons of Israel and say to them, when you enter the land which I am going to give you and reap its harvest, then you shall bring in the sheaves of the first fruits of your harvest to the priest. He shall wave the sheaves," in verse 11. "The priest shall wave it," still verse 11. 12, "when you wave the sheaf," verse 12, "for a burnt offering." 13, "grain offering," 2/10 of an ephah of fine flour mixed with oil, "an offering by fire to the Lord for a smoothing aroma with its drink offering, a fourth of a hin of wine, until this same day, until you have brought in the offering of your God. You shall neither eat bread nor roasted grain nor new growth. It is to be a perpetual statute throughout your generations in all your dwelling places." This first fruits should call back to mind Leviticus chapter 2. Leviticus chapter 2 and verse 12 is when we saw the first fruits offering. The first fruit is this Thanksgiving offering, and we made the point in that class that the first fruit would be hard to do because what if I don't get more, right? Yet, even in this, you see this concept of God giving rest to the land. You don't get to work the land. You give the land rest. And in that, you're going to see God also tell his people to give the land rest. There should have been a time where the people weren't working the land, where they're going to give this wave offering before God, and they're going to associate it with the burnt offering as well, a total consummation or total offering to God. They don't eat the produce of the land, in verse 14, until they offer this sacrifice. They don't gain anything until they give first to the Lord. I think that's important, even though it's not associated with any of the other religious holidays. Some observations about the Pentecost or the feast of weeks, 7 times 7 weeks. The Sabbath of the Passover was this feast of weeks. Jesus was crucified over Passover. 50 days later from the end of Passover, where Jesus was crucified, you have the start of the church. That to me is really awesome. 50 days later, you have the start of the church after the crucifixion of Jesus. Even in this day, this feast of Pentecost, they offer again to God. You have in verse 21 a completion of the grain offering. Verse 22, you see that God is still interested in the needs of others. He wants you to participate in helping provide for the needs of others. The Feast of Trumpets, that's a really cool study. It's one that I hadn't given much time to. But you have this announcing of things of God that reverberate or they echo to make that announcement even more powerful or even louder. There's a lot of cool applications that you can see to what we're called to do in our announcing and our proclamating and our preaching of the gospel in verses 23 through 25. You see, this Day of Atonement is supposed to be a day of mourning and fasting. Paul talks about in Acts chapter 27, verse 9, that it was dangerous to sail because they had just completed the fasting. So God's people still observe these religious holidays, even all the way through the New Testament. Again, that was from Acts chapter 27, verse 9. God specifies that this is supposed to be a humbling day. Now, the Feast of Tabernacles in verses 33 through 44... is going to last a whole week, and it's a highlight of all their feasts. There are more sacrifices here than any other feast. And interestingly enough, look at verse 40 of chapter 23. This is unique to the Feast of Tabernacles. "Now on the first day you shall take for yourselves the foliage of beautiful trees, palm branches, and boughs of leafy trees, and willows of the brook, and," this is the unique part, "you shall rejoice before the Lord your God for 7 days. They live in these temporary shelters. According to Nehemiah chapter 8, they never observed this. This is something that they failed to do. But God says, while you do this, you rejoice. There's a command to rejoice. That caught my attention because God's saying, in this festival, in the highlight of this feast, you are called to rejoice. No other feast do we see that. All right, we're in Leviticus chapter 23. Yeah, no worries. So, questions or comments on anything in chapter 23? Yes.
He ends chapter 23 the same way he ended 22.
Okay. Amen.
And not only that, but he usually or often references coming out of Egypt because that was a very significant event to him.
Absolutely. God repeats, and we saw this, we made a point of this, from Leviticus 18 and on, how many times he says, I am the Lord, I am the Lord. It's incredible that God is trying to reemphasize that to his people. And so verse 44 at the end of chapter 23, so Moses declared to the sons of Israel the appointed times of the Lord. Moses is really good about saying what God said to who God is telling him to speak to. So he recognizes the Lord's sovereignty and does exactly as he is instructed. Great observation. Any other questions, comments, or observations? All right, so the pattern of seven. We're back to this pattern of seven. These feasts celebrate God's provisions. And what provisions did God make for his people? Food, rescue, bread, forgiveness, etc. You can see those provisions. But they also are all what I called divine interruptions because of what God has done and what he's doing. Think about our holidays. Our holidays are an interruption to our daily lives, right? And maybe they're a welcomed interruption. Maybe it's something that you're like, yes, I want my day to be interrupted where I'm not working. But for some of us, that's really hard. It's hard to not be working. And yet, the point of those holidays is we're ceasing from work to commemorate or to observe something historical or something that man did. And we take pleasure and we delight in that. Well, what about what God has done? What about what God is doing? Do we take time to rest in knowing that God was able to accomplish these things? And so I went back, and I wanted it to come up side by side. It didn't happen, I guess. But in the keeping of the Sabbath, you go back to Exodus and Deuteronomy, where God instructs his people to keep the Sabbath. And I want you, if you want to really know what God is doing here, to compare these side by side. They're similar but different. And even the reasoning that God gives is different. For instance, why should I keep the Sabbath in Exodus? Well, verse 11 says, "For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy." So it makes me like God, and I imitate God when I observe this. But Deuteronomy gives a different reason. Verse 15, "You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out of there by a mighty hand and by an outstretched arm. Therefore the Lord your God commanded you to observe the Sabbath day." So there's similarities, but there's also differences in why God is commanding this. One, for instance, says to remember. One says to observe. And those are kind of simultaneous. If you remember, you will observe. If you observe, you will remember. But go back and look at that, or just make a footnote in Leviticus to see why God established that. I want to go back to Leviticus 12, though, and make this point. So this is God establishing the Passover. "Now the Lord said to Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, 'This month shall be the beginning of months for you. It is to be the first month of the year to you.'" So that's the establishing of Passover. That's where their religious holiday starts. Verse 16, "On the first day you shall have a holy assembly and another holy assembly on the seventh day. No work at all shall be done on them except what must be eaten by every person, that alone may be prepared by you." So God establishes the Sabbath. He tells his people to establish the Sabbath. And why is this important? Because this was their new creation. This was the beginning for them. This is when they were going to get out of Egyptian captivity. And in Exodus 19 say, I'm going to do all that God has commanded and instructed. This is their start. This is their beginning. This is their new birth, so to speak. They go through the waters that 1 Corinthians chapter 10 would say is like a baptism. And they come out new. So the Exodus is a new creation. It's a liberation from captivity to start serving God. It's liberation from Egypt that when you read Egypt is supposed to be synonymous with the land of exile, darkness, and death. And you come out to this promised land, this new Eden, so to speak, this land that God was going to give you. One of our brothers, I think, pointed that out, that you see a fulfillment of the promises that God made to Abraham. And so this is marked by a celebration of seven-day rituals. So you start seeing all this. This is the important part, and this is where observing what God has done starts becoming hard for me. The liberation requires that humans not try to provide their own security or their own provisions, but eat only what God allows and provides. I want to confess to y'all, I love being here. Like, man, if you could hear how Chelsea and I talk about the family here at university, like, we love y'all. We love being here. I'm really struggling with not being a full-time preacher and focusing on evangelism. And part of that is because I don't know how to rest. I very much think that if I don't do something and I'm not active, did I miss the second bell? No? Okay, good. That something will not get done. So when it comes to observing the Sabbath, this is really hard for me. But I need to understand this, and we all need to understand what God is saying when he talks about the religious holidays, observing the Passover, observing the Sabbath. God is saying, I don't need you to do anything. You could cease and do nothing, and that's okay. You could stop working, and that's okay, because guess what? I can provide. And guess what? I don't cease. I don't Shabbat, even though you Shabbat. There's some key takeaways from this, but hopefully you see the connection. God liberates his people from captivity and brings them to a new land, and he says, now rest. God has liberated us from captivity, and now he says, you delight in my rest. Not the Sabbath, my complete full rest. And again, I cite Hebrews 4 that makes that passage really strong, or makes that point really strong, and Colossians 2. It's not talking about a day. It's not talking about Saturday. It's talking about the complete fullness of rest found in Jesus Christ. And hopefully you can start tying in some of these things. I need to be done with my class. Thank you so much for your comments and participation. We'll pick up here on Wednesday, Lord willing. Y'all are dismissed.